Lake Effect brings you conversations about what's happening in Milwaukee and the people, places, and organizations that shape the community. This is Lake Effect Spotlight from WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. In August, scientists with NOAA's Great Lakes Environmental Research Laboratory discovered signs of underwater sinkholes in Lake Michigan. They found around 40 large sinkholes in Wisconsin's National Marine Sanctuary. They're cold, dark, and weirdly circular. The features are similar to sinkholes previously discovered in Lake Huron. But experts need more information before they can confirm that what's in Lake Michigan is just like the sinkholes in Lake Huron. Steve Ruberg joins WUWM's Lena Tran to share more. Ruberg is a physical scientist at the lab and begins by describing the sinkhole's accidental discovery.
Well, it's very similar to what happened in Lake Huron. There was an acoustic imaging survey. You know, they were looking for historic wrecks. So the National Marine Sanctuary, the Thunder Bay National Marine Sanctuary, did a survey. And during that survey, they came up with some bottom features that we wanted to go investigate. And we did. And a very similar thing happened here. The sanctuary, the new Wisconsin National Marine Sanctuary, they surveyed large bottom areas and these features came up. And so we wanted to do the same thing. We wanted to go and have a look at them.
What are we even talking about here? What is a sinkhole?
We've been looking at sinkholes on Lake Huron, and the sinkholes in that situation are eroded limestone features. And so when you look at the geology of the Great Lakes, Lake Michigan and Lake Huron especially, other lakes as well, but sit on a limestone geologic layer that was laid down, you know, 400 to 500 million years ago. And then on top of that, you have glacial activity. So the ones in Lake Huron, we've verified that those are referred to as karst features, limestone geology that has eroded. A cavern forms, that cavern collapses and forms a sinkhole. It appears that's what's happening on Lake Michigan for the sinkholes that we've recently located on the west side of Lake Michigan. These appear to be limestone features, but you know, we haven't been able to verify that to a high degree of certainty. We feel like they probably are, but there are other options for what they could be as well. And the interesting thing about the Great Lakes in general is that, you know, a very small portion of the Great Lakes have been explored. And we really haven't mapped a lot of the bottom. And we also haven't gone and looked at the things that we see when we map the bottom. And what we want to do in this case is not just to go look. We're really trying to understand the amount of groundwater that might be coming into these systems. And along with groundwater, we want to know what the chemical makeup is.
Mm-hmm. At first, there was this hint that they might be there through the acoustic surveys. You know, what did that look like?
Yeah, so we took a remotely operated vehicle with some sensors on it that would allow us to detect groundwater. The ones that we looked at, we were measuring things. It's called specific conductivity. And of course, we're measuring temperature. When we get into the sort of the zone where there's groundwater in the ones in Lake Huron, we're seeing higher than normal water temperatures. That's an indication of groundwater. But we're seeing much higher than normal levels of specific conductivity, which indicates that since we're going through water going through this limestone systems picks up a lot of salt and sulfur and other minerals. And so that's an indication that we're seeing groundwater coming into these systems. And then what we wanted to do is then quantify the amount of groundwater that's sort of residing in a sinkhole. Now, unfortunately, the ones that we looked at in Wisconsin and on Lake Michigan, we did not detect a groundwater signature.
So what does that mean? Jury's still out?
Jury's still out. Yeah, that's exactly what it means. We did see a lot of interesting life down there. There, you know, we saw a number of deep water sculpin and, of course, unfortunately, a lot of quagga mussels and creatures like that. I'm not ready to say that this is a sinkhole that's similar to Lake Huron. These are much bigger and they're just very strangely circular. It's really, they're very interesting. And so it's possible that if we get out deeper, just the natural erosion of the limestone, the groundwater will eventually stop coming into them. It's possible that the deeper ones may still have groundwater. And so then we'd be venturing outside of the sanctuary area that had already been mapped. You know, what in the long run, we want to know how much water is coming in from these features. And that sort of adds to, we have a model of lake, a lake level model. We know that the groundwater input into that lake level model is very, very small. But still, for completion, we'd like to try to get an idea of how much groundwater is coming in. The other thing, too, is that the groundwater has a lot of salt and sulfur. And knowing how much salt and sulfur chloride is getting into the system is important to sort of get a baseline for what the inputs of those sorts of things into the Great Lakes are.
What kinds of things might we learn from these features? What could it tell us about Lake Michigan or the geological history of the Great Lakes?
Yeah, I mean, that's what we're hoping is that, you know, if there are these limestone karst features, you're going back, you know, 400 to 500 million years ago, right? And that's what the shallow sea that, you know, we sit on now is providing this signal of, you know, the chloride and the sulfate that I mentioned before. But then more recent times, you know, we've had, of course, glacial activity that formed the Great Lakes. And, you know, that could have laid down some of the clay features that we're seeing and that kind of thing. So it's just kind of telling us the history of these systems and how they've changed over time.
Sinkholes represent unique refugia environments in the biosphere. Presumably, life like this was everywhere in the early biosphere. Now they are constrained to small pockets where there's no oxygen and high sulfur conditions.
That's Bopi Badanda. He's a microbial ecologist at Grand Valley State University in Michigan. And he's studied the microbes that live in Lake Huron sinkholes.
So there's the excitement of working with these extreme life forms that, you know, their way of life provides a window into the distant paleo past. I'm talking 2 to 3 billion years ago. In Lake Huron, there are shallow and deep water sinkholes. Shallow ones where sunlight comes in and deep water where there no sunlight comes in. Here, low oxygen, high sulfur conditions fuel microbial mass like ancient cyanobacteria that first oxygenated the planet. They colonize these lake bottoms and grow on it. Offshore, where there's no light, you can't have photosynthesis, so there's no cyanobacteria. They're chemosynthetic sulfur oxidizing bacteria. In the deep, there is only chemosynthetic white mats. And these are not very different from what the Alvin submersible and other deep sea submersibles see around deep sea vents, just white sulfur oxidizing microbial mats. So we have many analogs. Now, one life where probably life in the modern day lakes, which probably resembled, you know, the Proterozoic ocean, early seas 3.3 billion years ago, and also analogs for deep sea sulfur vents. So right in our backyard, we have a window to the past as well as to the deep sea. One of the biggest questions is how microbial mats like this in conditions similar to modern day sinkholes may have helped oxygenate our planet. So that is a big question. And there are clues to suggest these mats similar to these might have played a major role, because for the longest time, the shallow seas were all where a thin film of life clung to the sediments. And these could have gradually and slowly oxygenated the water column so life could become planktonic. And then when the seas and the atmosphere was well oxygenated, a couple of billion years later, life could crawl on to the terrestrial biosphere. So there's some deep roots we can examine, because all models and fossil evidence predicts and demonstrates might have existed 3 billion years ago are still almost the very same ones that we find in the sinkholes. So that's the big grand question. But it's very interesting to me that these small things, you know, hard to find and very little in stature and but they might have had an impact on our very, very being here today, you know, in evolutionary terms. And that they might threaten as they might be, they might even survive us in the long run.
Bopi Badanda is a microbial ecologist at Grand Valley State University. You also heard from Steve Ruberg with NOAA's Great Lakes Environmental Research Laboratory. They both spoke with WUWM's Lena Tran. You can find more interviews like this one by visiting WUWM.com/lakeeffect. And while you're there, subscribe to the Lake Effect Spotlight podcast.